The following podcast may contain inappropriate language, sexual content, and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Gonzo.moe No Name Anime Show. It's a podcast where we talk about nameless anime, probably. I'm JP. I'm joined by Kyle. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, JP. Just the two of us this episode, so I hope people aren't too lonely.
I mean, we'll see. We did the news broom like this. I forgot to edit it, so as of this recording, it has not been posted. It's going to be probably an hour late this week. But by the time people hear this, it will have already been out. So I don't know what to tell you. We may or may not be joined by Noelle partly through here. So we're gonna power through it. We know how to talk about cartoons with just two people, right? This is our weekly discussion podcast. We talk about news. We talk about reviews. We answer your Twitter questions. We keep it usually to about an hour. If you want more episodes, you can find them on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify. You can also go to the website, which is gonzo.moe, where you can find any show notes, more episodes, and our Twitter handles. And if you want to leave a voicemail, it is 716-46-MOE-43. That is 716-466-6343. So, starting out this week, I'm going to talk about some Twitter stuff. So, this past week, well, I guess technically, oh no, today's Monday. So yesterday, Anime Expo wrapped up, and so we got some, there was a lot of discussion about the crowds at Anime Expo. Specifically, DaLadybug Man asked if we were planning to talk about that. Did you see any of that on online, Kyle?
It looked insane.
Yeah, it was a lot.
A lot. Like, they literally looked like sardines packed in a can. I don't know how they were moving, but like, they weren't moving in any of the pictures I saw.
Yeah, that's kind of just how Anime Expo is, so I don't know what people were expecting.
But this is, I just want to say, like, what? Like, the closest thing, maybe criminally negligent. Of just like to do that now with that level of crowds.
Well, they had to get the fire marshal involved, was my understanding.
Yeah, which seems to me to be saying that they went over capacity and they just kept on selling and letting people in.
I don't know why they don't like enforce like attendance caps with things like this. Cause even outside, let's say there's no risk from people gathering like that, that's still a lot of people, which can be dangerous.
I mean, imagine that crowd if they did have to evacuate, they'd have been fucked. People have been trampled to death just straight up.
I guess I don't know what the capacity is for a building like that. I don't know which building it's in, but I know that Anime Expo regularly gets around 100,000 people.
Just so many people. I feel bad for everyone who decided to go and got stuck in that. But, like, again, it's the reason why I will never go to AX. Like, once upon a time, when I was getting into the anime world, I knew, like, this is the biggest one. And then I saw the crowds once. And even years ago, I went, nope, I'm good. Otakon is enough people for me.
I would like to experience it once, but I would probably have a similar experience. I'm a big fan of, like, the smaller, like, almost kind of community feel of like a small convention.
Yeah.
But I really like the quality of panel and the quality of like dealers and the access to industry that you get at a show like Otakon. Like if we could have Otakon, but with like 5,000 people, that would be the perfect convention for me.
I mean, I think that Otakon moving into that new space kind of gives it that feel. Like, I remember the biggest year at when they were back at Baltimore, Otakon, and I took a picture outside of like a line that wasn't that big, but it was like, oh, it will take you 2 to 3 hours to get into the convention, even if you have a ticket,
yeah,
kind of thing. And I thought at the time, like, oh, wow, like that's crazy. And with the new space, I feel like it, you don't necessarily feel that very much. Like, it feels like you get in and out of places pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Outside of the things which are like instantly full.
Well, and that can happen at the smaller shows too. The first year I went to Anime Detour, this would have been probably 2009, maybe 2010. We waited over an hour to get in because there was just like a backup with registration. They figured that out moving forward. Like, they figured out a system that got people through really quickly. Yeah. But that first year I went, we probably waited in line for 2 hours. So even with like a, you know, they maybe had 2,000 people. Even with the smaller cons, that can happen. And I know the second year I went to Animaniapolis, which, fuck that con and fuck Ryan Comp. But I didn't know that he was a bad dude at the time, and I was invited to the convention. That was also maybe an hour to 2 hour wait to get in. But it's less about the number of people, and it's more about the space that I like about the smaller convention. What I really liked about Anime Detour was that everything was just there. You know, your hotel was the convention center. Like, the dealer's room was, like, you could throw a football from that to the panels. Whereas Otakon, I really like everything about it, but I don't like how long it takes to walk to things. Even if there's no crowd.
It's a big space.
You know, at a smaller convention like Anime Detour, I like that you could conceivably wake up 10 minutes before you have to present your panel, throw on pants, and get there on time. That is impossible at Otakon.
I only went to one con. I went to Non-DesCon, which is a Denver con. That was my first anime convention, and that was like a hotel con.
Mm-hmm.
But like, honestly, like, that had some of the worst lines I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, the smaller cons are oftentimes not as well organized because it's just like a bunch of people that are doing this, you know, on their day off.
Like imagine waiting in a line for an hour to get into like a hotel, like a small ballroom, not even like a big one. We're talking like a little tiny one. And it's like, I think there were probably less than 20 dealers or something. It was probably like between 10 and 20, somewhere in there.
I think like the big takeaway from Anime Expo is that I think a lot of people don't really understand how logistics in events work. Because I see all these people like, why aren't they enforcing masks? Why aren't they doing this? And it's like, do you expect a volunteer who's probably in high school to go around yelling at people? What are they going to do? You know? What do you expect? Do you expect them to drag these people out? Well, you still have 10,000 other people for them to drag out. And, you know, yes, personally, I do think that people should be wearing masks at an event like that, but it's impossible to enforce that.
It's a big difference between an Alamo draft house, right?
Yeah.
And a giant effing convention where literally people cannot move in a direction because there's a human body there.
Well, it's more that if we're not going to have government mandates, it is impossible to enforce these rules. Because that's the only reason why we did it at Otakon. Like, I did it because that's just personally what I'm comfortable doing. But also, like, you still had to wear a mask in D.C., I'm pretty sure. Unless I'm misremembering.
I do know that Otakon just announced their mask policy, and they are requiring masks and vaccine proof.
I guess we'll see what happens. That's in less than a month.
No, they literally just announced it like today on Twitter.
No, what I mean is how well that's adhered to. Sorry.
Right, like in terms of enforcement. Yeah. I'm sure. But like at least the fact that they are doing more than, you know, the clusterfuck that we've seen at so many cons of just like, nope, and then having to, you know, hastily retreat back after they get a loud public outcry.
Yeah.
At least makes me more optimistic. And I do think that it is easier to enforce when you have a space that like allows that amount of people, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would be easier to enforce at Otakon. I'm not saying it would be easy, but relative to just like what a nightmare it looked like at AX.
I guess I don't know how people get in and out of, what is it? Probably the, like, I don't know, LA Convention Center. Is that what it's called? I don't know where they have it.
I just don't understand why they're like, let's put it this way. Like, AX is famously like industry con, right? Like, they have like, they're not known for their panels. I've heard many people say like their panels in general are kind of like, eh. Like, you go there for to see like all the companies there and announcing their cool stuff. Like, why?
I guess what I mean is, with how people get in and out of Otakon, I feel like it's very easy to just give somebody a mask if they're not wearing one. Because we all have to go through that same like bag check, metal detector thingy. I don't know what the system is like at Anime Expo. But yeah, I also, I don't know what the draw is. Maybe it's just that California's big. Who knows?
It's just weeb sensing each other and they start clinging to each other. It's all that static electricity.
Although New York is also very, very large and our convention gets, I don't know, similar to Otakon numbers. So who knows?
Yeah.
We have another Twitter question suggestion. This is from Otaku Crack. It says, with Bastard and a lot of classics coming back, what would you like to see brought back in OVA / short film format?
Ooh, OVA.
I guess, or a TV show. Because, I mean, like, Ursa Yatsura is getting rebooted as a TV series. And, like, Spriggan is kind of an in-between. It's a 6-episode OVA, but they're longer, so it's about the same length as a TV series.
Right.
And Bastard is actually, that's a 26-episode show, I believe.
Oh, the new one, you mean?
Yeah, I think so. I was thinking about this, and my answer is miserable. I would love to see an Apocalypse Zero show.
Apocalypse Zero, what's that?
Oh my god, Apocalypse Zero is nonsense. It's like a really horny parody version of the Guyver.
Okay.
This guy, he goes to anime high school, and it's in the post-apocalypse. So, like, why are they still going to high school? I don't know. And they get attacked by, like, sex monsters. And the guy, like, he puts on essentially a Guyver suit and then, like, punches them until their faces explode. It is fucking ridiculous. It got a 2-episode OVA in either, like, the late 90s or early 2000s. And I really like it. It's also, you may hear Kakugo no Susume, I think is the Japanese title of it, but it's called Apocalypse Zero.
Okay.
Outside of Japan. It got, I want to say, 10 or 12 volumes of manga. We got 6 of them in America. Media Blasters was releasing it, and it must not have been doing so hot because they did not finish their run. But also, Media Blasters just shut down their manga line. That was when, like, all the anime companies had their own manga line, except Funimation, I don't think, did it. But ADV had manga. Media Blasters had manga. Viz obviously still does manga. Tokyo Pop did the reverse. They had an anime line.
Oof.
I'm trying to think if there was any others. Dark Horse never got into anime, I don't think.
Didn't they?
They may have. I don't know. But yeah, that was a weird time. But I would love to see like a fully animated version of that.
Like, let's see, cool OVA. I mean, the problem with OVAs is like they tend, like, as a, you know, kind of a format, we tend to see less like adaptations, I think, in OVAs. We tend to get a lot of like weird, like, hey, this is something I came up with and my team made, and I didn't necessarily have to base it on something.
Yeah, or we're getting the swimsuit episode of, like, I don't know, the Assassination Classroom. Like, OVAs occupy a weird space now.
Yeah, I think today, like, they tend to be, like, we saw that announcement, just, we were talking about it on the newsroom, of, like, oh, there's going to be an OVA for the that weird harem show, maybe?
Yeah, or was it I'm Quitting Heroing? Whatever,
yeah,
it was.
But it was like on the, like, oh, on the DVD, we're including an OVA.
Yeah.
So, it, like you said, it tends to be just like a little extra something. Let's see. In terms of what I would like an, you know, if we're talking about like an animated property from the last few years that kind of has like an extra little budget to it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. That's so tough.
I also would love to see a modern remake of Haibane Renmei.
Haibane Renmei
was so, it's such a beautiful story. I think everything about it is great. Like, don't change the script, don't change the shot composition. I just want to see them reanimate it with a budget, because that show looks terrible.
Yeah.
Everything else is great. Like, leave the voice acting, just reanimate it.
Oh, do you know what I would really like to see as a OVA?
What do you got?
Oh, sorry. Jay, he was just messaging me.
Oh, yeah. Noel's going to show up in a few minutes.
Okay. But no, I would really love to see maybe a, not Lupin. What is it? It's,
Kindaiji Case Files?
I just lost it. Kindaiji Case Files.
I'm trying to think. Master of Mystique? What is it called? We got Detective Conan. Fuck. You know, the problem with this question for me is so much of what I like about the anime that I've seen is that it exists in that era. Like, Yu Yu Hakusho is one of my favorite anime, like, of all time. I don't want to see a new version of Yu Yu Hakusho because one of the things that I like about it so much is that it's made with a 90s aesthetic. You know, it's doing experimental things for the era. If they made it now, I don't think it would have any charm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a big problem, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other examples. Or like, you know, the Yoshiaki Kawajiri films that I like. I like them because of how they look. I don't want to see them redone.
I mean, that's the thing, though. I think that when you look at, like, they can make really good stylish animation today. I don't think we get a lot of it. I think we get a lot more generic kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
like as of norm. So, I mean, I would love to see a modern OVA with like the spirit of, I just watched it and I talked about it. The,
Time Bokan?
Oh, no, Toy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is the craziest OVA I've ever seen in my life. So good, so visually distinct, and like very, but it's still very 80s. I would love to see someone take that same spirit of like, yo, this is what we can do today. Like, what I was going to say a minute ago is I would love to see, Takeshi Koike do one of his characters from Redline and just do like a random episode where we go deeper into like, I don't know, like what, you know, cause all those characters in that movie are all major characters,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's like a weird Racky Races. And by the end of the episode like of the movie, you kind of get all of them at least in like the broad, but I would love to see like, cause I think that there's actually one OVA already of one of the characters, you know, why don't just do like a weird crazy sci-fi one about those like horny princesses or something. I don't know.
I'm going to look that up to see if there is a short film of Redline. I've only seen the movie one time. I know you're like the super fan of Redline.
I'm a big, big Redline guy.
My quick search, I'm not finding anything. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a short
exists.
Film.
It came out before Redline.
Oh, that makes sense.
It's called like Trava and Planet or Trava and Fist.
Yep, I see it. I see it here. Trava Fist Planet.
Oh, see, wow. I actually got it right, just in parts.
Nice. Well, Noel is joining our podcast right now. Once he turns his microphone off, we can ask him what... there he is. Hey, how you doing, Noel?
Hey, how's it going?
We are currently talking about anime that we would like to see remade. The examples they gave was like Bastard.
But they're talking about like OVA, remade into an OVA. Well, or just like OVAs you would like to see.
Realistically, I kind of wouldn't want to see anything remade into OVAs nowadays, just because like that's kind of like an outdated format, just because we really don't do home video that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about like the streaming platforms. I will say if we were to do anything with OVAs, I would like to see more original projects done with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
I will say though, on the subject of Bastard, I have been watching that and that is a rush.
In a good way?
Yeah, nah, it's a good show. I will say though, like some of it, like you look at it and like, yeah, this was based on a manga from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So take with that what you will. I just imagine the guy in charge of like Netflix's anime division is some like 50-year-old dude who was into anime in like the 70s and the 80s and it's just like, yep, it's my time to shine. We're making a Spriggan anime and a Bastard anime. We're going all in on Baki.
Yeah.
Just everything. Yeah.
Get me JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Right.
Yeah, that would not surprise me. Well, so the next one that we have, this one is for me specifically. This is from J. Ronald71. They said, tell us about your Otakon panel. So I recently got my Sound of Anime panel accepted. This is a panel I did last year as well. It got added like last minute. It got a decent crowd considering it was a last minute addition to the schedule. And this is a panel that I put together because I do not see panels like this, and I wish I had when I was, you know, studying sound and getting into anime. And so I talk about, like, not like, oh, how to be a voice actor, but what do voice actors do, and, like, how do we capture it? And so I talk about the equipment. I talk about, like, Pro Tools briefly. I talk briefly about preamps. I show tons of behind the scenes of voice actors working in the booth. But I also talk about, at least last year, I may rewrite this. I went into how they recorded dubs during COVID and where some people got vocal booths and some people just did it in their closet, but they all did it remote. I talk about sound design and how you can use sound effects to tell your story, as well as ambience and how you can use silence to tell a story. And then I just give tons of examples of those things. So like one of the examples I use is Sweetness and Lightning. That's a show about cooking. And so I just cut out all the dialogue from one of the cooking sequences and we just listen to the sound effects. So it's a good time. I believe I got kind of a bummer time slot. I'm one of the first panels on Friday.
Oh man.
But I think it'll be a good time. J. Ronald also said, talk about the Macross news and why should we care about it?
Cause Macross is like a generational, like, robot show. It's foundational in a lot of like different stuff. Like if you like idol anime, Macross kind of opened the door for a lot of that.
I mean, it's one of the three unassailable pillars of sci-fi anime alongside Space Battleship Yamato and Mobile Suit Gundam. I think it is the weakest of those pillars and the one which should not be relied upon for a foundational strength kind of thing. But you know what? It is giant. And regardless of whether you're a fan of it, it is megaton news.
Right. Now that I think about it, is there like a particular reason why I don't see a whole lot of Macross representation in like Super Robot Wars games?
Probably because they were bickering for 30 years about who owned the rights to it.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I believe that we see Macross in, I mean, like, we also don't have very much Super Robot Wars content in America. Like, that's only recently have we started to get them.
Yeah.
Like, it was very sporadic.
Right. I'm talking about the ones that I have played.
I believe that a big reason why we didn't is because of rights. Just because.
Okay.
But yeah, it's cool news. I am not a super Macross fan, but maybe that's just because it's been so hard to get a hold of.
I think that's a similar case with me.
Yeah, I was lucky. Someone on Twitter many years ago was like, hey, I'm getting rid of I have an Animaigo set. Does anyone want to buy it off me? And so I did. And I think it's Brian Ruse. He's the Oshii guy.
Nice.
Yeah. I have his set and, you know, it's lovely. And I really do like original Macross, even as like, I kind of hate what it birthed.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it just sucks that like, I literally like, oh, I only found it because I knew a guy, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Right. Like the only way for most people to get it is to pirate it. And up until this agreement, I wholeheartedly supported every single person doing that.
Well, I had a friend who invited me to those Macross movies and I told him no because I had work and he was just like, but you love Symphogear. Macross walked so that Symphogear could run.
I mean, that's fair.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, it is true. But
I really want to see Do You Remember Love Again? That's kind of my only exposure to Macross and I feel like that's one of the only pieces left in the puzzle.
Yeah, the ones that we did not get licensed are original Macross, and of course, Do You Remember Love?
Well, so we'll see what happens. I know that the agreement they came to may have excluded just those two, So, because there was something about anything after this date. We're like, fuck, that's the year before, year after. Do you remember Love Was Made? But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. If these sell well, which I assume they will, then that'll be incentive for them to release more stuff.
Did we ever get like Macross model kits over here at least?
I don't know.
If we did, they were as Robotech.
They were, sure. Yeah, they were probably labeled Robotech. It came with like a Rick Hunter.
So
specifically said Rick Hunter.
We have some anime to talk about this week. I was going to have Noel go first, but I don't know what you brought to the table this week.
What is it? I brought Dai, the Adventures of Dai.
Okay, perfect. So that's,
I thought you were telling us to go, you know, Dai. Yeah. But got it.
That is what I had in the in my outline, because that's what we didn't get to last week. So I guess if you want to talk about that, you have the floor.
Okay. Yeah. So I want to ask you guys, I know it's universally known that probably like the three of us are not the biggest fans of what you would consider isekai anime.
I'm probably tolerant of the three of us.
Yeah, I would say you're tolerant, but you're not just like, oh man, I gotta go watch.
Oh yeah, no.
Stuck in another world with my.
Yeah, I don't seek it out, but it won't stop me from watching something.
Right. Yeah. So, I want to ask you guys something. What's a particular element of isekai anime that sticks in your craw that makes you say, nah, I'm not dealing with this.
I don't like how exposition heavy the first episodes tend to be. Mm. Like Konosuba was really hard for me. The first half was just the main character and like this deity person talking about like the rules of the world and how he needs to get reincarnated as this or that. And it was so boring to me that I almost turned it off. But I wanted to see what Konosuba was about because I was editing somebody's review for it. I did not get far in that show.
Okay. And what about you, Vinny? What would you say?
Vinny, is an element? Kyle.
That's okay. Kyle, no worries.
I have to say.
No, but the thing that bothers me the most about isekai is how human-centric it is. I really dislike how, and also it's like really, I actually have like a whole piece I'm gonna write probably for the site. But the problem with isekai is that like it's, I think it's just so rooted in the kind of, like, I don't know, powerlessness people feel right now. Mm. Of like, oh, like, I can't do anything to affect my life. Like, my life was basically fucked from the moment I was born. And, like, I'm, like, caught in these inescapable systems. And the only way to be fixed is for, like, God or some, like, unknowable force to pluck me from my horrible life and put me into a better one. And it's this, like, weird reward of just, like, oh, I didn't have to do anything. It was just given to me. I'm so passive that like, and like, I think there's something really weird about that. And it's like really sad what it says about like what people think about reality.
Okay.
You know, yeah, that is a very philosophical answer. And I feel like I can see that from a lot of isekai shows.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
The most popular ones anyways.
Right. I would say, with me, my biggest issue with isekai shows is how stock value their worlds are, how their worlds don't necessarily need a lot of world building because they're really just kind of like, it's like an MMO, you know, MMOs, you know, RPGs, it's like one of them. So, which I feel like is a lazy writing, dynamic.
Yeah. It was fun the first time I saw it.
Yeah, definitely. So what if I told you guys that there was an anime out there based on a manga, based on a video game that didn't do any of that,
but was still an isekai?
And was not an isekai.
Oh, okay. I'm in. Okay,
so you're saying that, I don't know very much about the series, but you're saying that Adventures of Dai, it's not like he's a... So you're saying that it's not like a person playing as a Dragon Quest character, but in that, like, it's in universe. It's just about.
Yeah, no, it's in like a Dragon Quest universe. Like everything works like in the way that stuff in the Dragon Quest world works.
Got it. But it's not like it's presented in any way as a video game. It's just that we understand that Dragon Quest is a video game.
So exactly. It's an anime with a fantasy setting that doesn't have a self-insert character for modern era.
Exactly. Nice. Which is, once again, like that's why I also love Bastard.
Rune Soldier.
Exactly. Good, but Orphan, Slayers. Like, give me some high fantasy anime that does not involve a guy in a tracksuit who got hit by a bus and now he got reincarnated, but just as the same guy in a tracksuit, and now he's walking around with elf hose. So
such a low bar.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a low bar to cross, but like Dragon Quest The Adventures of Dai like leaps over the bar. And you're like, you didn't need to leap. You could have just stepped over it. So so basically, Adventure of Dai is about this kid named Dai who, when he was a baby, he washed up on the shore of this island that's inhabited all by Dragon Quest monsters.
Nice.
Yeah, so you got your lump shamans, you got your slimes, you got your golems and were tigers or what have you. This will only make sense to people who play Dragon Quest.
Which
I know. Yeah, these are all famous Dragon Quest monsters.
Right, yeah. So he spends like the first 12 years of his life like raised by monsters and whatnot until a number of events happen where like people come to the island in search of like some rare monsters that they can capture and sell to a kingdom, and Dai's just like, hey, don't kidnap my family, guy. And he beats them up. And the king of like the kingdom that they were going to sell these monsters to are just like, wow, this kid's really dope. He like risked his life to save these monsters that he's lived with all of his life. You, young sir, Dai, you're a hero. And he sends like a previous hero to go train Dai in the ways of being a hero.
Nice.
Yeah. But once again, an interesting thing about Dai is that the moniker of hero, it's not like they don't really treat it too much like a character class. That's one thing I enjoy about. Yeah. Like, cause very easily that could just become a video game convention where they're like, hey, go to the class shrine and change your class Dai to become a hero, like what they do in Final Fantasy IV.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. But, no, like, that, Kyle, is, in a way, it's a lot of stuff that, like, Dai has to work towards.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't just read a scroll and become a hero. He has to, like, learn how to properly use spells and learn these different techniques that he gains from his mentor.
Actual kind of hero's journey versus the just like chosen one narrative.
Yeah, like this is a shonen manga. So we got training arcs. We got training arcs here. Dai has to learn how to cut a rock. And then he has to learn how to cut a waterfall.
Oh my God.
Yes. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
There was a whole arc in Demon Slayer about cutting a rock.
Exactly. But yeah, then that leads to Dai going out on a journey to stop the, unfortunately, this is where like, you know, your shonen anime cliches start to come to roost because, hey, this is a manga from the 1980s because you got the Dark King Vern and his dark generals who are trying to take over the world. So now Dai's like, oh man, I got to go on a journey to beat the Dark King.
Let me ask you this, because like I know that Dragon Quest is, of course, originally based on the work of Akira Toriyama. Do you think that like that kind of shared DNA helps it in that sense?
See, that's the crazy part, because it has very shared DNA. Like, if you look at Dai, he looks like Goku, but with longer limbs. Like imagine like young Goku from early Dragon Ball, but like longer limbs. That's what Dai is.
Sounds like a recipe for success to me.
Yeah.
Do you know how this got made? Like, with it being so old, was there an anniversary?
I'm not sure if it was the anniversary. I do know that originally there was an anime for it back in 1991, but it did not cover the entire story. And I guess this new 2020 anime is their plan is to cover the whole thing.
Nice. I'm looking at the person that writes the manga, and they also created Beat the Vandal Buster.
Yes, that's how I originally heard about Dai's adventure, because I was like reading old Shonen Jump back in the day as a kid, and I was reading Beat the Vandal Buster, and I saw an interview with Riku Sanjo, and they were talking about like, yeah, you used to write Dragon Quest, The Adventures of Dai. How is that? And he's just like, yeah, it's a fun manga.
Oh my god. They're also credited with creating MD Geist.
Wait,
holy shit.
This is a new wrinkle.
I don't know how true this is, but their Anime News Network page says MD Geist original creator. Holy fuck.
You're saying that this is went from maybe I'll watch this to I must watch this?
I mean, I don't know if Dai is gonna fight the Death Force at Brain Palace, but
he might.
Yeah, it is certainly something that could come up.
I mean, Dai fights the Dark Energy Reactor at Vern Palace.
Oh my god. MD Geist was just him trying again.
Oh man, like
I gotta look up the artist. Koji Inada. Let's see what this person's been up to. Also Beat the Vandal Buster. Very nice. It's great pedigree here.
Yeah, seriously. Have either of you read Beat the Vandal Buster?
I think I've read like the first chapter, because Shonen Jump had a preview back when it was like the print edition, I think.
Yeah.
And then some like lunatic company tried to put the anime out, and I think that Land of Obscusion is still mad that it didn't all come out.
Yes, I know the anime did come out, and I know I read like the first two volumes of the manga.
Was it good?
I don't even remember. I really don't. I know that Beat was kind of cool because he had like five cool weapons that like his brother and his friends like put inside of him.
This picture they have on ANN has him with a Naginata, I think. Or maybe that's a spear. I can't tell.
Right, like, yeah, he had that, he had a big old sword, he had a big gun, I think he had big knives, too.
Nice.
Yeah, so, back to Dai. Yeah, so Dai has to... So, yeah, and, you know, like I said, Dai's adventure is some serious, like, shonen manga throwbacks, because you got Dai fighting, like, big bosses... going to towns and beating them, and then when he beats them they go like, oh man, now that you've defeated me, I know the error of my ways, live strong young Dai, and then he like falls out of a castle and presumably dies, but then 30 chapters later he shows up again. He's like, God. Hey Dai, what's up, I'm one of your friends now.
That is one of my favorite tropes of shonen anime.
Also really Dragon Quest though. Like I've played 1 through 6 and that seems very spot on.
Right. Like there is specifically a character called Hyunkel. He's basically Dai's Vegeta.
Oh my god.
In that he was also raised by monsters, but the monster that raised him got killed by Avon, the previous hero. So now he's like, I hate heroes, they suck. Until Dai beats him and he's like, I now know the error of my ways, but unfortunately I'm going to drown in this pool of lava.
Oh, I don't
know. And then 5 episodes later, he's like, JK, I didn't drown in that lava.
How? What temperature does lava need to be that you can drown in it before you burn to death?
See, that's the crazy part. Because like he sinks into the lava. He does like the Terminator 2 thumbs up as like the... But apparently, the guy who, the other guy I was talking about, the one who fell out of the tower, he like saved that guy. He ended up saving Hyunkul.
Oh my God.
Just before, like, and that is a recurring thing with Hyunkul. Because, like, what was it? Do you remember in Yu Yu Hakusho when, like, Yusuke used all of his life energy and killed himself fighting Suzaku?
Which time?
That's the thing. Hyunkul does that maybe five times.
Oh my God. That is like every time Yusuke comes up against an enemy he can't beat, he's like, well, guess I'll die.
Yes.
It's the best show.
Yeah. The episodes I'm currently on, they're saying that now maybe Hyunkul won't be able to fight anymore because he's almost died so many times.
Yeah.
But I don't buy that for a second. I think eventually he's going to be like, yeah, nah, turns out I can still fight.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like this is something that we should watch.
It is. It is something you should watch. I will say, though, it is like previous episode I was talking about being beholden to the 12 episode like mark thing, and Dai does not do that. Like, Dai has been running straight since 2020. So it's up to, I want to say, episode 87 now.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
That's uncommon these days.
It is. It really is. And it's one of the things I like about the show.
And is this,
I don't think I would be like into it as much if it wasn't like a weekly thing I could check out.
Is this on Crunchyroll, or where do I watch this?
It is on Crunchyroll. Yeah.
Very nice. Any parting words for Legend of Dai?
It's pretty good. I want to look back and look at like history and see when Dragon Ball made the conversion over to like Z, like the Z storylines with like the Saiyans and stuff, and compare that to when like it's revealed who Dai's father is, because it's very similar.
Oh God.
Yeah. Like, Dai's not an alien, but his dad is like a dragon man.
Very nice. Yeah, it's been on my radar for a while. There was like a union thing that was happening a few months ago where the dub got held up.
Right. I don't know if
that ever got resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shoot. That's another thing about Dai. I really feel like that's something you could have on cable television at like 3 p.m. when kids are coming back from school.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because there's not a whole lot of blood and like really gruesome violence in it.
Yeah, like it's not on TV, is it?
It's not, no.
Is it? And, oh wait, but if it's on Crunchyroll. Do you know if it's streaming anywhere else?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, that's exciting, I think. Maybe. I don't know. Is it dubbed or just subbed on
there? It is just subbed, I will say that, yeah.
Oh, I wonder where the dub is going. Because they're definitely producing a dub.
I mean, I would be excited if I heard that it was getting dubbed and just put on like daytime television. Like, that would be dope. I feel like if you put it on like Toonami, no one's really watching that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Toonami starts too damn late.
It really does.
Well, we've got not a ton of time. I'm going to talk really quickly about a show
watched. You can take up the rest of the time. I can talk about my thing next week.
I don't think I can talk about Licorice Recoil for 15 minutes, Kyle.
About what?
Licorice Recoil. It's a show that me and Kyle have been interested in. We've been reading the news about it because it has some pretty cool character designs. It's from a director who, this is their debut. Shingo Adachi, they're best known as a character designer, and they, I guess, famously are the character designer for Sword Art Online, but they also did character designs for a bunch of Mega Man anime. They worked on Working, and Working.
Oh, hey, I like Working.
More exclamation points. there's a third exclamation point in there, but it looks like for the they did Pompo the Cinephile as well. So they're a pretty well-known character designer. And this is their directorial debut. I believe this is an original television show. And so the first episode, I didn't realize that it had come out. Me and Kyle watched the trailer I think yesterday.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a few weeks now.
Yeah. So the first episode came out on the 2nd, and it has a really strong opening, I felt. So I didn't know, because we talked about the show and hyped it up, and I never read the description. So I didn't know it was about, like, young girl assassins that work at a coffee shop.
Yeah, I'm reading this description. It's pretty wild.
It also feels like there's some airs of Minority Report in there.
Oh, really?
Because the opening sequence in the show is the main character, I believe it's Chisato, and she's talking about how great and how peaceful Japan has been, but this is overlaid with these young girls just walking up to people about to commit crime and executing them.
Cool.
Hot.
But it's like people that are like about to stab someone or like blow up a building, not just like, I'm going to steal a watch and this is Mad Bull's retribution.
But we already did friggin' Psycho Pass.
Yeah.
No, Psycho Pass is Blade Runner, right?
I never watched Psycho Pass, so I couldn't tell you.
Psycho Pass is Blade Runner. I don't think it's Minority Report.
Nah, isn't it also Minority Report? Because
it was both?
Hey, yeah, it's like, hey, based on your mood, you're about to commit a crime. We're going to shoot you with this taser gun.
Oh, nice.
Well, so it didn't come into play a ton in the first episode. It was just like the opening sequence, because the rest of it, they were going after people that had already committed crimes. But the opening sequence, there is one of these assassins. I'm going by the character names on Wikipedia. They don't have pictures next to them, but I'm assuming the main, whatever you call it, the lead is Takina. And she gets in trouble for executing a bunch of people without permission. Because one of her teammates is being held hostage and home base is like, don't do it yet. We have a plan. And then she just mows them all down with a machine gun. And they're like, you could have killed such and such. And she just looks at her superior and says, well, did she die? And then she gets knocked out. And so her punishment, instead of just like getting her badge and gun taken away, she has to go work for the coffee shop that Chisato works at, which is called Licorice Recoil.
Okay.
And so
when I first looked this up, Google was giving me licorice pizza.
Nice. Not that. Or let's see. Wikipedia says Cafe Lico Rico. But yeah, so from what I can tell, the way that this cafe / assassin group works is they're, I don't know, kind of like the Kenshin Trigun assassination. Like, they don't want to kill the bad guy. They just want to stop them.
Okay.
Because that's what Chisato was trying to teach this person, is like, we can stop them without murdering them. Like, maybe don't murder every person you see. And I thought I had a fun.
And also, if you're 30 and you meet like a cool 17-year-old, you should marry them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also, what is this, Kite? You should kidnap them.
No, I was saying Kenshin.
Oh, yeah. Kenshin. Yes. But don't give them, what is it? Space bog disease or whatever Kenshin gives. I can't remember her name.
Kaoru.
I like this show. I'm gonna keep watching it. The first episode, it kind of slowed down a little bit in the middle, which I had trouble with, but it sped back up in terms of pacing and action by the end, and I understand that they did that on purpose, because otherwise the ending wouldn't have had any impact. But it doesn't mean that I didn't get bored. Because there's just this whole bit where Chisato is giving this person a tour and teaching her how everything is, you know, works in their little organization. And I'm just like, all right, can we get back to executing drug dealers?
You know, they have to set up stuff. You can't be mad at them. Let's put it this way. This was episode, the last one, and they're giving a tour, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Well, then you could be pissed. But when they're setting up stuff in the first episode, you can't be like, what? What is this?
This is bullshit.
I don't know nothing about this universe. Do not want to learn things.
I just got so excited by the opening sequence, and then they took it away from me, Kyle.
Yeah.
They're giving you a little taste. Little teaser. Come on back, JP. Keep watching.
Don't worry.
You know, here's some action.
Here's a Yakuza boss. We're going to shoot him. Don't worry.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Please stay around. More is on the way.
What do you
personally
got,
I prefer when an anime does it does action its whole first episode, and then we do the exposition episode two.
Ooh.
It's like, okay, yeah, I'm invested. I see what's going on. Now you can tell me what everything is. Like,
I
what
like that.
Yeah. Now you can tell me what chakra is.
I'm really over exaggerating. It was like 7 minutes of the episode didn't have action, and I just got mad. It's like the back half of the episode, they're on a mission. And
is this that show that, what is it? I keep seeing like clips of it on Twitter where people are complaining because the character notices that the bullets that shot through this car door are non-lethal.
Yes.
And they're like, how are they non-lethal if they shot through a car door?
Yes, it's that show.
Okay.
It fucking rules. When I realized those were like trap bullets, I wanted to like punch the air. But yeah, that's Licorice Recoil. I can't really say a whole lot because it just was like an action heavy episode. And without like going point for point of everything that happened, like you got to watch it on your own. But I really liked it. It reminded me a little bit of Blood Sea, because Blood Sea also has the coffee shop home base. And I think Tokatsu Ramen may have also done that. I'm a big fan of the "we have a secret headquarters that is a coffee shop."
Now, how did you feel about Blood Sea?
I loved Blood Sea with all
of
my heart.
There we go. Because I know some people who don't love Blood Sea.
Well,
and they're like, boo, it was boring.
They don't know how nice it's outside today, and they wake up and have their coffee too. They can go fuck themselves. That's the best show ever. It's so bad in parts, and that's why it's so awesome. Blood Sea, if you have not watched it, people, it's a show where the first like 20 minutes is just what's her name?
Saya.
She's just walking around being a goofball, going to anime high school and drinking coffee and singing about how good it is. And you're like, I thought this was a Blood the Last Vampire sequel. What the fuck is happening? And the last 3 minutes is her just like executing a monster in the most gory fashion possible.
Yes.
And that's like the first 10 episodes of that show.
And then like the last episode is like a bunch of vampire rabbits like killing
people. Oh my god. And then the movie, it's so much. It's so incongruous. Ooh. The movie wraps up the series. Like it's just like a long episode 14, essentially.
Right.
But yeah, Licorice Pizza Recoil, you should watch it probably.
Not Licorice Pizza.
Licorice Recoil Pizza. Kyle, I know I didn't give you much time, but are you able to talk about Sunny Boy in the time I'm giving you? No? Okay.
No, I need more time than 6 minutes. Sorry.
One other thing I wanted to bring up is in regards to that question about bringing back OVAs and something like that. Now that I think about it more, I would like to see more Madball OVAs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think his family does not want more Mad Bull if his recent comments and indications have been made.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they're you know, for decades, they're like, fuck, Uncle Koike is really making us look bad.
I mean, I wouldn't want a Mad Bull series just because I feel like the deeper you go into that manga, the more like horrific the politics of it get. Because Mad Bull has some kind of confused politics in regards to police, because was it one of the early stories is about Daisaburo having to testify against a police officer who shoots an unarmed man?
Oh my god.
Yeah. And then later in that manga, Mad Bull shoots two teenagers who are robbing a bank, and when Daisaburo calls him out on it, he's like, hey, they were wearing Ronald Reagan masks, which means they had no respect for America. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's best, considering all the right-wing folks who have anime avatars, to just leave that one alone.
Right.
I feel like Kazuo Koike may not have realized how powerful that was. You know, like, I think he was just making a goofy cop manga and just writing about current events in America at the time.
Hmm.
He just wanted to make an anime where a cop ties grenades to his pubic hair.
Right.
There's nothing political about that.
If we don't allow the cops to tie grenades to their pubes, then that'll just allow criminals to tie grenades to their pubes.
Yeah, that's how you put pube grenades in the hands of criminals.
Exactly.
It's also, don't they attach shotguns to cats?
Yes. Yeah, the shotgun cats.
I get that, but the first thing.
Ooh. Oh, Kyle, have you never experienced Mad Bull 34?
No, I think I own it on DVD, but I've never actually put it into the, to put the disc in the tray.
Oh, it's out of this world.
I would greatly recommend putting the disc into the tray. Yeah. It is well worth your time.
We probably have a Mad Bull 34 podcast in our future.
Oh,
yeah, after my experience with Riccio, when you guys forced me to watch that, I feel like you're probably right.
It's very similar. Well, the person that created Mad Bull trained the person that made Riccio.
Yes.
There you go.
But yeah, Mad Bull 34 is great. I almost wonder if that's a multiple podcast thing, because those are, I feel like those are hour-long episodes.
You want to do the whole, the Fast Karate thing and just do each episode?
We could, or we could do, when I originally reviewed Mad Bull, I think we did two episodes of podcast.
Oh, okay.
But we could just do four hours of terror. But yeah, I guess that's in our future.
I could also talk about My Home Hero, because I heard you guys talk about it on the Newsbroom. Because I heard that was getting an anime.
Oh, is that the one about the businessman that has to save his daughter?
Yes. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I listen to the Newsbroom, and occasionally you guys will be like, "Oh man, this manga is getting an anime, whatever." And I'm like, "I know that manga."
That's why I bring those things up, because I know somebody out there knows what we're talking about.
Right.
Well, this has been illuminating. We have talked about so many important things. I don't know. I'm trying to stall. I've got 2 minutes. Let me look through my notes and see if there's anything. Last week, I was going to talk about Asadora. I can do that very briefly. Asadora is a manga from Naoki Urasawa. It's great. Currently, 5 volumes are out. It is about a young girl who learns how to fly a plane, and then she's going to use it to fight Water Godzilla. I don't know. It's unclear. I've read 5 volumes of this manga and I still don't know what's going on, but it's so... you pick up a volume, you can't put it down until you're done.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I'd seen this.
It's really good.
Because volume one is her as a small girl doing that, that face from the candy, right?
From the candy?
I don't... It's some kind of Japanese food product, and the mascot is a little girl making that face.
Okay. Yeah, she starts very young, and then it flashes forward 7 or 10 years or something. And she's a hotshot pilot. She's working at an advertising agency,
and she wants to fight Water Godzilla.
Well, because Water Godzilla may have killed her parents, but she doesn't know it and can't prove it, and then she gets hired to protect the integrity of the Olympics. I don't know. Isn't
regular Godzilla Water Godzilla? Because he can swim.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh, Godzilla's so big that Godzilla touches the sea floor, is what I think happens.
Really? I thought it was just that he could swim. That's what they made it seem like in Godzilla versus King Kong.
Well,
I mean, I'm talking about newer Godzillas. Godzilla appears in Tokyo Bay, but it just is Godzilla can probably breathe underwater, and then Godzilla just comes onto land. But I don't think Godzilla's not buoyant.
All I can think of, this is a deep cut. If anybody remembers the band Emmanuel, there was a song called Underwater, and I'm just thinking Godzilla can't breathe underwater.
But he can breathe underwater.
Anyway, this has been the No Name Anime Show. You can find more episodes at gonza.moe. We're also on Spotify. We're on Google. We're on Apple. Leave us voicemails. Download our podcast. Thank you for listening. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you for sending in your questions. I'll do better to answer them next time. Wampa wampa.
4th of July. Make sure to leave a beer out for Jack Bauer so he can give you an American flag bikini.
Okay, fair. That's a podcast.